All right. Have you ever felt like signing a contract is kind of like playing legal roulette? You know, just skimming through all those long paragraphs and hoping for the best.
Oh, yeah, I think we've all been there.
Well, today we're taking a deep dive into a case that really highlights the importance of reading the fine print, especially those sneaky little clauses about where you can sue.
You're talking about forum selection clauses, right?
You got it. And the case that brought all this to the forefront is Stewart Organization, Inc. v. RICO Corp. It's a landmark Supreme Court decision that has some pretty big implications for anyone who's ever signed a contract, especially in business.
This case is a great example of how seemingly straightforward business deals can get really complicated really fast.
So, let's set the stage here. What exactly happened in this case?
Well, it all started with a pretty standard dealership agreement between Stewart, a company based in Alabama, and RICO, the well-known copy machine company. They're headquartered in New Jersey.
So I've got an Alabama company and a New Jersey company, and I'm guessing things didn't exactly go smoothly.
You could say that. You see, tucked away in that contract was a clause stating that any legal disputes had to be settled in a Manhattan court. When their business relationship went sour, Stewart decided, hey, I'm going to ignore that clause, and filed a lawsuit right there in Alabama.
Now, I'm no lawyer, but that seems kind of risky, right? I
It
mean, they signed a contract.
is, and that's where things get really interesting. To understand why Stewart felt they could do that, we need to understand a bit about Alabama and their legal system. Alabama courts have historically been pretty skeptical of forum selection clauses. They often see them as potentially unfair to smaller businesses or individuals who might feel pressured into signing agreements that could put them at a disadvantage.
So it sounds like Alabama was trying to protect its own businesses from potentially being forced into a legal battle on someone else's home turf.
You could definitely see it that way. Now, RICO, of course, wasn't too happy about being sued in Alabama. They wanted to enforce the contract and have the case heard in Manhattan, as they had agreed. To do that, they relied on a federal law. Specifically, it's 28 U.S.C. Section 1404A, a law that gives federal courts the power to transfer cases to a different location if it's deemed more convenient or serves the interest of justice. And that's where things get really, really interesting, legally speaking.
All right, so we've got Alabama law sort of pushing in one direction, federal law pushing in another, and this forum selection clause stuck right in the middle. What happened next?
Well, the case went to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and they sided with RICO, ruling that federal law had the upper hand in this situation. But Stewart wasn't giving up so easily.
They took it all the way to the Supreme Court, right?
You got it. And this is where the case gets really significant. The justices had to grapple with this fundamental question: does state law or federal law get to decide when it comes to transferring cases between courts, especially when you have a forum selection clause involved?
It's like this epic showdown between state and federal authority.
Exactly. And everyone was watching to see how the Supreme Court would rule.
So, what did they decide? Which side won?
Well, the court came down firmly on the side of federal law. They ruled that this federal law, 28 U.S.C. Section 1404A, that we were talking about, overrides any conflicting state laws. That means that federal courts have the final say when it comes to deciding where a case will be heard. And that includes the power to set aside a forum selection clause.
Wait, so what you're saying is that even if I sign a contract that says I have to settle any disputes in a specific location, a federal court can just say, nope, we're doing it somewhere else.
It's not quite that simple.
Oh.
The Supreme Court didn't completely disregard forum selection clauses. What they did was clarify that while these clauses should be given significant weight in these decisions, they're not ironclad guarantees.
So it's not a complete free-for-all. What other things do the courts look at when deciding whether or not to actually honor a forum selection clause?
That's where the specifics of 1304A come in. It lists out several factors that federal courts are supposed to consider.
Like what?
Well, a major one is convenience.
Makes sense.
The court will look at things like how far the parties and witnesses have to travel, where the evidence is located, you know, things like that. The idea is that the location of the trial shouldn't create an unnecessary burden on one side or the other.
Right. It wouldn't be very fair to make someone travel across the country just because of some clause buried in a contract, especially if the other party is right there.
And on top of convenience, the courts also have to consider something called the interest of justice.
Okay, now that sounds pretty vague. What exactly does interest of justice mean in this context?
It's a bit broader than just convenience. It involves looking at the bigger picture and deciding what would be the fairest and most efficient way to handle the case.
I see.
This could include things like whether the courts in a particular location are already swamped with other cases. You know, a huge backlog could lead to really long delays.
Right, that wouldn't be good for anyone involved.
And they might also consider whether a particular court has more experience or expertise in the specific legal issues at play in the case.
So it's not just about ticking boxes on a checklist. It's about actually stepping back and looking at the whole picture.
Exactly. And that's what makes the Stewart decision so important. It gives federal courts this flexibility to balance all these competing interests and make sure that the location of a trial is genuinely fair and efficient for everyone involved. But not everyone was happy with that outcome.
Oh.
Nope. In fact, we had a pretty fiery dissenting opinion from Justice Scalia.
Ooh, I love a good dissenting opinion. Let's hear it.
Well, Scalia felt very strongly that deciding whether a forum selection clause is valid should have been left up to state law, not federal law. And his argument was based on something called the Erie Doctrine.
Okay, hold on. The Erie Doctrine.
I know, it sounds complicated, but it's actually pretty straightforward.
Cool.
It's a legal principle that basically says that in certain types of cases that are heard in federal court, the federal court should use the appropriate state law to decide the substantive issues of the case. This applies especially to diversity cases like Stewart, where we have parties from different states.
So Scalia felt that figuring out if a forum selection clause is valid is a substantive issue, not just a procedural one. Which means it should be governed by state law. Am I getting that right?
You got it. And that's where we see this really interesting clash between two fundamental ideas in our legal system. Mm-hmm. The idea of federal procedural supremacy versus respecting state law in these kinds of cases.
This is getting pretty deep.
It is. And it's a debate that continues to this day.
So we've got this divide between folks who really believe in a smooth and efficient federal system and those who think individual state laws and interpretations should carry more weight.
Right. And that's what makes Stewart such a fascinating case. It really highlights these tensions and forces us to grapple with some fundamental questions about how our legal system works.
Well, this has been fascinating so far. But let's bring it back down to earth for a moment. I mean, what does all of this actually mean for someone like me, or really anyone listening, who might be about to sign a contract with one of these forum selection clauses hiding somewhere in the fine print?
That's a great question, and it's exactly what we're going to dive into in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay, so we left off on this cliffhanger about what the Stewart case really means for us in the real world. You know, what should people actually do when they encounter one of these forum selection clauses?
The big takeaway is don't just skim over them. I mean, it's tempting to just glance at it and assume it's standard boilerplate language, but these clauses can have a huge impact on where your case ends up and how it plays out.
So what should people be looking for specifically when they see one of these clauses?
Well, first off, figure out where it says disputes will be settled. Does that location make sense? I mean, would it create any logistical or financial burdens for you to have to travel there and litigate?
Right. I guess that makes sense. What if you're the one drafting the contract, though? I mean, let's say you're a business owner and you want to include a forum selection clause that's actually going to hold up in court. What are some best practices?
That's where understanding the Stewart case can really come in handy. You know, we talked about that federal law, 28 U.S.C. Section 44A, and how it lists out those factors that courts are going to consider.
Right. Convenience, fairness, all that stuff.
Exactly. So if you want your chosen forum to be more likely to stick, you need to address those factors head on.
You mean like spell it out in the contract?
Yeah, you can literally write it in. Let's say, for example, you're a company based in California and you're making a deal with a supplier over in New York. You want any disputes to be settled in California. You could actually acknowledge in your forum selection clause that this might be inconvenient for the New York supplier and offer to cover their travel costs.
Ah, so you're showing the court that you've already thought about the fairness issue.
Right. You're trying to preemptively address those concerns that a court might have, making it much harder for the other party to argue that your chosen forum is unfair or unreasonable.
Smart. It's like you're playing legal chess, thinking a few moves ahead.
Exactly. You got to be strategic about it.
Now, before we move on, I do want to touch on something else we mentioned earlier. Justice Kennedy's concurring opinion.
Oh, yeah. That was an interesting one.
He seemed to be drawing a connection to another case, the Bremen v. Zapata Offshore Co. Didn't that case establish a pretty strong presumption in favor of just going ahead and enforcing those forum selection clauses, especially in situations involving international commerce?
It did. And that's what makes Kennedy's opinion so fascinating.
Because you would think they'd just apply the same logic to Stewart, right? I mean,
right.
We're talking about interstate commerce here.
Well, here's the key difference. In Bremen, you had two really sophisticated parties engaging in international trade. They were both big players with a lot of
So there's
resources.
more of a level playing field.
Right. But in Stuart, you have a situation where one party might have significantly more power and resources than the other.
So Kennedy was worried about those potential power imbalances.
Exactly. He saw the danger of just blindly enforcing these clauses without taking into account the specific circumstances and potential fairness issues. He felt strongly that courts need that flexibility to consider all those factors we talked about, those factors from 1404A, you know, to make sure the outcome is actually just.
So it's not just about honoring what's written in the contract. It's about making sure that the process itself is fair and that the legal system isn't being used as a weapon by the more powerful party.
You got it.
And Kennedy also seemed to be putting a lot of emphasis on the need for the courts to operate efficiently.
Oh, absolutely. He argued that letting courts make these kinds of decisions can really help streamline things.
Meaning it prevents those long, drawn-out procedural battles over where a case should be heard.
Exactly. Saves everyone time and money in the long run.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, stepping back from the specifics of the Stuart case, it really seems to highlight this ongoing tension in our legal system, that push and pull between state and federal law.
You hit the nail on the head. This tension is at the heart of American federalism. It's this constant question of, who gets to decide? Where does state power end and federal power begin?
Yeah, it's like this never-ending debate.
And Stuart really throws it into sharp relief, especially when you're talking about diversity jurisdiction, where you have those federal courts trying to apply state law while also upholding federal procedural rules.
Talk about a juggling act.
It is. So beyond just telling us that those forum selection clauses can be challenged, what lasting impact do you think Stuart had on the legal landscape?
That's a great question. What do you think?
Well, for one thing, it really solidified that idea of federal procedural supremacy in these kinds of cases. The Supreme Court basically said, look, the feds are in charge when it comes to managing their own dockets and making sure things run smoothly.
And for lawyers and businesses that regularly deal with contracts that cross state lines, I imagine it was a big wake-up call.
Oh, yeah. Stuart was a reminder that you can't just focus on drafting airtight contracts. You have to understand the bigger picture, too. You have to know how those contracts are going to be interpreted and applied within this complex legal system we have.
It's almost like you have to be a legal scholar and a strategist all rolled into one.
That's a good way to put it. Now, despite all we've talked about, there's this one nagging question that I just can't shake.
Oh. What's that?
Does the Stuart decision really strike the right balance, you know, between letting parties freely enter into contracts and giving those courts the power to potentially step in and change those agreements? It's a tough question. There are definitely strong arguments on both sides of this.
Well, let's dive into those arguments then. Let's start with the arguments in favor of the Stuart decision. Why might someone say the court got it right?
Well, one of the most compelling arguments is that giving those courts the flexibility to sometimes override a forum selection clause can really help prevent abuse. You know, think about those classic David and Goliath situations.
Listening.
You have a huge corporation trying to use a forum selection clause to drag a small business or an individual all the way across the country to litigate in some far-off court.
Right. And that could make it so expensive and difficult for that smaller party that they basically have to give up, even if they have a totally legitimate claim.
Exactly. And that's where the court's ability to step in and look at things like fairness and convenience becomes really important. It helps level the playing field and make sure that everyone has access to justice, regardless of their size or how much money they have.
So in a way, the Stuart decision is upholding a core value of our justice system, that idea that everyone should have a fair chance to be heard.
Right. And then there's also the issue of efficiency. Allowing courts to take into account factors like court congestion and where the witnesses are located can really help to streamline the litigation process.
It helps to prevent things from getting bogged down in all these procedural battles over where a case should be heard.
Yep. It keeps things moving. But of course, it's not all black and white. There are definitely valid arguments against giving those courts too much power to just toss out these forum selection clauses.
Okay, let's hear the other side then. Why might someone be critical of the Stuart decision?
One of the biggest concerns is that it injects a lot of uncertainty into contract law. If people can't rely on those forum selection clauses to be enforced consistently, it makes them a lot more hesitant to do business across state lines. I mean, who wants to risk getting hauled into court in some random state?
Right. It could create a real chilling effect on interstate commerce.
Exactly. And then there's this fundamental principle of freedom of contract. If two parties agree to something, shouldn't they be bound by that agreement?
That's a good point. It does raise questions about the role of the courts and whether they should be able to step in and potentially change the terms of a private agreement, even if it's in the name of fairness or efficiency.
And some critics of the Stewart decision also argue that it could actually lead to more litigation, not less.
How so?
Well, if parties know that those forum selection clauses aren't absolute guarantees, they're a lot more likely to try and challenge them in court, hoping to find a judge who might be more sympathetic to their side or a venue that might give them an advantage.
So instead of making things more efficient, it could actually backfire and create more legal battles and expenses.
It's a valid concern. Ultimately, the big question is whether the Stewart decision strikes the right balance. Does it give enough certainty and predictability to contract law while also ensuring that the system is fair and accessible to everyone?
Seems like there's no easy answer to that question.
There isn't. And that's what makes these landmark cases so interesting. They often raise more questions than they answer.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We've really delved into the Stewart Organization, Inc. v. RICOcorp case.
We have. From the facts and the reasoning, all the way to the dissenting opinions and the broader implications for contract law and federalism.
But as always, we want to leave you, our listeners, with something to think about. What do you think about the Stewart decision? Does it strike the right balance between honoring contracts and ensuring fairness? Could this lead to even more litigation over these clauses, or will it ultimately help make contracting more efficient and predictable?
It's definitely food for thought.
We encourage you to keep exploring these questions and think about how the Stewart case might impact your own legal work or business dealings. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.